Nice.
Awesome.
Still sounding good?
Sounding great, yeah.
Cool, man. Well, thank you for having me on, for damn sure. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no, this is super cool. Actually, I was familiar with your NTS show from a while back because you play some like really freaky psych folk 60s uber rare gem, the absolute vault. And then I listened to your new record and I was like, oh man, this brings me back to like the Silt Breeze days, you know, with the analog quality. It felt like of the time because it's so out of time and everything of the time kind of feels weirdly placed and it just doesn't hit. Yeah, man, if you want to introduce yourself, talk a little bit about your process. I want to get into kind of like analog recording, Tascam 4-track stuff, just the history of psych folk, hidden garage rock gems, anything like that. So Baroque psychedelia. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, so I'm Calvin LeCompte. I asked Barrett basically if he'd be interested in doing this show. So again, thank you. Yeah, I just made a new album called Yankee Doodle Comeback. And it's coming out on Maximum Exposure, which is a label run by a guy named Tony Price. But yeah, Barrett was referring to my NTS show on... yeah, it's called the U-Line Catalog, and it's sort of like a niche specialty show of kind of shit from like 1961 would pass, I guess, to like 83 or something. And I'm not like hyper conscious of that. I mean, shit goes beyond those parameters, but it just seems to be like that's sort of the zone I operate in. The show used to be on a different platform in New York, and and it was a little more like freestyle. And yeah, when it got on NTS, I just figured I'll just hold down this sort of area, and it's probably, I mean, it's disputably the best music, I think. I mean, like the, you know, but yeah, so once a month I just have to go on YouTube, basically. I mean, you know, I've looked for music as much as everybody else does. Like, you know, I don't identify as a DJ or anything like that. Yeah, when you have like a fucking a commitment once a month, you know, you want to show up and do a good job. So a lot of the music, all the music is sourced off of YouTube because that's where all the stuff is, really. I mean, I'm actually glad I've never really went on to Soulseek, just because that would be more work, and YouTube has been fine so far. But yeah,
tell me a little bit about how you got into this stuff, because you're throwing in the Folklords, the Haunted, even stuff like from the 80s, Tangled Shoelaces. That's a deep cut. So, like, how did you get into this stuff?
That's a good question, man. I mean, let's think. When I was younger, I mean, you get exposed to bands like the Troggs or something. And, you know, I think you just gravitate towards that shit. I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think. When people ask me about the show, I often will just kind of explain, like... Basically, if your favorite artist, you want to find a demo of your favorite artist from the 60s or something. It doesn't have to be some private press guy or whatever. And you Google it on YouTube, like whoever uploaded that, there's a good chance they might have uploaded other like rare, interesting shit. And, you know, one thing kind of just leads to another. And the real like people doing the work. I mean, it's sort of like a line of custody with this music. I mean, somebody... I mean, yeah, first someone makes it, but then you got the person, like for the diggers or whatever, somebody goes to the record store, that person fucking uploads it. Then the YouTube channels is sort of where I come in, and those people are organizing it all, and some are more organized than others, but most of them like stay on theme.
You know, it kind of reminds me a little bit of like Pierre Scaffoldi, you know, or just sort of like these old head discogs, blogger types that are just kind of like indexing this music from this, like, kind of, I guess you could say, lost archival perspective, as, you know, technology kind of is indexing everything. It's just pulling from metadata and drawing its own conclusions and creating this, like, you know, kind of depersonalized relationship with music, art, information. It's, I think it's kind of, there's something like really nice about somebody who just uploads stuff to an index on their own, and they're doing it from this kind of like conservationist place rather than there being some kind of like critique or antagonistic, you know, essence or quality to it. That's something that I think about a lot right now, is just like, what does it mean to just be enthusiastic about a genre or a period of music or a period of art or writing or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, to that point, it's interesting when people on YouTube will upload something that is so ubiquitous on YouTube. Like, if you were to upload I Want to Hold Your Hand or something, like, why would you do that, really? But it's an interesting thing to do. But yeah, no, it's crazy, man. I mean, some of these accounts, dude, I mean, the way, since the show is monthly, YouTube, like, it's cool that they, you can organize your searches by like what was uploaded by most recent. So I just sort of go to the end of each month. And, but yeah, man, some of these accounts, dude, people are uploading like, just all the time. And there's some just incredible ones. And, NTS sometimes will take one of these YouTube account people and they've like spotlit them or whatever and given them like a show, which is cool. A lot of the people that I pull from, actually.
How old are these people? Are they like way older? Like, what's the general age demographic?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't really know, because it's like, you know, all you have is if they decided to upload a picture on their profile pic,
right?
Like, you know, that's all you would know. And two of the most interesting accounts, they've been kind of quiet for a bit, look like just like middle-aged, like Korean women, and it's just interesting that maybe it's just like a placeholder image, but it's just a very nondescript looking person, nothing like racial about it. It's just it's hard to imagine this character is obsessed with psychedelic rock or whatever, but who knows, why not?
Did you ever get kind of like handed down any records from, you know, your family, or did you go to a store, or like, what was kind of the first thing that like drew you to this kind of hazy, mercurial, off-kilter sound? Because your music, it's mostly just all guitar. It's very sort of rooted in this. It kind of reminds me a little bit of the Television Personalities, which, like, I love, I love that band. Or like even early Felt, like early, you know, before Evergreen Dazed or something like that. It kind of has a bit of that vibe. But of course, it's like also, you know, has that, it sounds like Index a little bit. I love Index.
Oh, sure.
You know, yeah, that record's great. The Ashes, not to get, even a bit of the Monkees, you know, and it's just, so there's something about it. Like, what got you into that? And like, why is the analog tape hiss quality important? Like, what does that mean to you personally?
No, I hear you. Like, for instance, the other night I was making music with a friend of mine, and it's very difficult for me. I've just always made music alone. But I was talking to my friend, and this guy is like, he's a really good musician and works with good people and stuff. And we kind of had a project we started, and I was like, hey, man, like, if you have, like, forgive me if I'm like obsessed with making it sound like shit. Like, but that's just what I like to, you know, but, I think what started it, I mean, really the first thing that comes to mind is like during the Napster days, you know, I liked, you know, like Weezer and shit. And then you find like a Weezer, B-sides of Weezer were kind of available. As far as becoming obsessed with demos, I'm trying to think what band, but I think demos always just sort of were interesting to me, and I always prefer the demo. I mean, nothing against produced music, but demos, I think we all like demos kind of for the same reason. They're like raw and intimate and I don't know. I just always am very, I find the demo to be much more interesting a lot of the time.
Even with my own music, sometimes I'm like, you know, I should have just put out the demo. You know, like, why didn't I put that out? And, now I don't do demos because I'm all computer, and you're still kind of sticking it out. Like, what kind of Tascam do you use? Because I've had a 246, I've had the 244, or that Porta Studio 02. I had the 464, that like gray, kind of ugly one. Like, what? Mm-hmm. What's your relationship with cassette tapes, and how many takes do you usually do? Do you do bounce downs and stuff like that?
That's a good question. Like you, I have a bunch of tape machines. I have a Tascam. That's definitely not my primary one. Not for any specific reason. A long time ago, I'm a pretty big Ariel Pink fan, and on the back of the Doldrums, he credited the Yamaha MT-8X as the machine that he recorded the record with. And so I got one of those, and that might have been my first four track. And like four tracks, as you know, we're about the same age. I think that we probably started making music on computers more than like tapes. I mean, that wasn't like a commercial. I mean, maybe you started earlier than me, actually. I have no idea. But in high school, I wasn't making music. But yeah, the learning curve to like a four track cassette is kind of complicated, man. Like you have to bounce pan shit to the left and right and all that. But by now, I mean, I really prefer hardware. I mean, I've been doing this for a long time, but yeah, I record on the Yamaha MT4X, which is four tracks. I mean, having eight is nice, but and I run everything through a Korg CR4. If you've ever seen this machine, it's like I've heard that it was the last four track ever put into production, and it's a crazy looking machine. I have two of them. It's like it has built-in effects. All the inputs are in the front of the machine, which it's the little things that that make it easier. Reaching around the back, missing the fucking input, it'll drive you nuts sometimes. But it has built-in effects. Everything is direct. You print the effects on it. There's no auxiliary option. But and my first album I made entirely on the Korg CR4, and this new one, when we're in the studio, I'm sure you'll work it one way and then maybe hit a dead end and you'll have this brilliant idea to do something completely different or whatever. I kind of bounce around, and like, for instance, what's attractive about the Tascams you spoke of and my Yamaha is that it has you could punch in cleanly, with the foot pedal on this Korg thing. It's like basically a regular cassette recorder. You could punch in with pause, I guess. But anyways, yeah, the punching capabilities of the Yamaha MT4X are kind of what really saved my ass in this last record. Because I don't know, man. I mean, I was working on fucking making music. I mean, my last album came out in 2021. And dude, I'm just one of these people who just shows up to his studio every day. And at a point I was kind of hitting, essentially writer's block, but I would keep fucking working. And and then I just, I don't know. I made this last album in the course of 10 days, and the sequence of it is as is, completely unaffected, just recorded basically in real time. And I was listening to Trot, actually, and Trot kind of has a similar vibe where it's not one song, but they seamlessly kind of go together in a lot of places.
We did that in one day.
Nice. Yeah, it's a good album. I like the percussive element on it a lot, too.
Yeah, Chino Amobi is kind of a, he's a sound collage master, so... Yeah, all the stuff that he added, and he kept it really sparse though, and which I, I was really surprised. I thought he was going to go more maximalist. Yeah, that thing came together. You know, there's sometimes when it's like, it'll take me a year to finish two tracks. And then I just finished this EP. You know, it was like every day recording for 8-9 hours a day just to get it to where I wanted to go for like, you know, a couple months solid. So, but you know, it's like, that's kind of how it is. It's like sometimes things take a long time. Sometimes they take barely any time. And then you're just like, all right, let's just make some cover art for it and just upload it and, you know, see what happens. And, you know, but when you're doing things from like a more left field angle, it's, you know what I mean? Like it's hard. It's because it's so hard to gauge, like, is this a good time to put something out? Is this a bad time to put something out? Do I have writer's block? Do I need to put this down for a while? So like what it, I mean, this has been your first album in like 4 years, you said, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Which is crazy. But dude, I'm telling you, man, I think moving forward, I'm not intimidated by the studio. I never was, but it just wasn't working out for so fucking long. It was crazy. Like, but you know, I'm a guy who likes, like in, I don't know, this album and the last one, it would sound like I'm a freewheeling, experimentally sort of man, but I'm like really like fucking rigid. And that's also why tape helps. But yeah, so it's like to find like, cause I'll just beat the shit out of a song to death until it's like really just not interesting. So there's moving quickly is something that is important for me to like kind of have a successful, because I have to, you know, if I sit on something too long, it's hard to return to. And I've been where you're at. I have had successful songs that it took months to write. Is your new stuff like how long are these tracks that you're releasing?
4 to 6.5 minutes each. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a concept EP, and there's 4 songs. But there's something about it. When I listen to your album, and I listened to it a couple times, Let me take a pause. Yankee Doodle
Comeback.
Okay. Mm. Great song titles: Apple Butter, Lantern Light, John Chapman's Theme, Minutes from the Garden, Liberty Etude, Star Spangled Bay Parade. Like, what is the album about? Because there seems to be like, it kind of hints at this like lost America or something. Mm-hmm. Like that, or is it geographic? You know, it almost has like that kind of like bicentennial 1970s.
Yeah, that's completely, or 1700s.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I made this fucking album, and the songs were moving so quickly. Like the way that it was recorded, again, I will answer your question, it's all in like 4 to 8 measure punch-ins, where like the idea of writing a change became so fucking annoying and daunting that I was like, oh, I'll just punch in all my changes and not really give a shit what came before it. That's why it kind of has this like meandering, I don't know. It's like it probably doesn't return to, you know, standard verse chorus formula very often, but maybe sometimes it does. But as far as the concept goes, yeah, I just kind of slapped this album together and was really satisfied with how it sounded, which, you know, like it sounds like a cliche, but it is all that matters if you like your own shit. And so that was very, I was very happy with that. But as far as the titles and themes of the album go, it could have gone any way. Like, cause like my last album, like I identify with that as like a more personal statement album in a way about, it's like more breakup orientated, and left to my own devices, I'll be like a little emo in a way that I don't like really, but I thought it was successful. I really like my first album, but with this, it's not like, it doesn't sound anything like Ween, but it like, it has sort of that spirit of like, it's just fucking, it's nothing really, but it's but so I had an opportunity. What's up?
It's goofy, but it's like wistful, you know?
Right. And so I had an opportunity to like kind of make it about something. And honestly, dude, I think you know, just writing down titles. I like doing that, like little phrases and shit. I think Yankee Doodle Comeback came to mind. And I was like, all right, fuck it. That'll be the name of the album, whatever. And then, so now I'm in this Yankee Doodle world. And yeah, I kind of just made like 10 or it's 14 tracks, but of like this loose theme of like a man in Massachusetts just prior to the Boston Tea Party. Yeah, it completely makes no sense. Yeah, that's why it's like the Bay and like it's like, or what are the fucking titles? An Appeal to Fanwell. That's like Faneuil Hall in Boston, but it's like a fake movie of the Revolutionary Times or something.
So that's really interesting because, you know, not to wade into, you know, political territory or anything. There's a lot of sort of, I guess, unease or anxiety about this, like, idea that America's ending, that we're sort of entering a new era. And I'm sort of really interested in like psychogeography, man. You know what I mean? Just like these internal places that we can go. Like mine for a little while was like Micronesia. It was like the tiniest islands in Micronesia, or like a steakhouse. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Would you say it's like, it's trying to manifest something like physically in the world, or is it just more like an internal world for you to go into and then, you know, maybe others can inhabit it too?
I would say the latter. I'm definitely not trying to manifest the spirit of 76 necessarily. Like, right, but, yeah. Dude, I hate to do this. I'm such a fucking interview rookie. I have my alarm going off. It's probably in the thing. Let me just turn this off real quick. My alarm clock.
I can't even hear it.
Oh, you can't. Let me just close my door then. Yeah, I think it's just like a fake place. I don't know. Just like, you know, for instance, also, I really love James Ferraro. And I feel like a lot of his shit is sort of like that. Like a soundtrack to... I mean, isn't that the whole nature of the definition of like hypnagogic pop? It's like a memory that never existed or some shit. Right, it's like, yeah, kind of, you know. So, yeah, I think it was sort of my take on that sort of thing. And yeah, it's sort of just fun, I guess. And I mean, when the album art like comes out and all the imagery attached to it, I don't know. It's just something that like... what else is it going to be about? I don't know. I guess steakhouses and shit, you know?
Yeah. You know, the whole hypnagogic pop thing, I remember when that came out, I was playing in bands that were labeled that, and at least working in projects that were sort of, you know, tangentially associated with whatever that thing was. But the thing I remember the most about it was like, it kind of got a bad rap. You know what I mean? Because it was like, well, man, you're just some like, you know, groovy hipster in like, you know, Highland Park, California, and you're trying to withdraw yourself from the world. You're not, there's no sort of critical engagement with the world. But I also think that critical engagement itself is so symbolically depleted and so charged with spectacle that it's almost like, I mean, the only thing you can do is kind of, you know, make that special place, at least in like a kind of material sense, you know, get really into your studies. If you're into, I don't know, the history of bookbinding, or you're into, you know, the history of trust busting, or you know what I mean? Like there's,
sure.
I'm really sort of fascinated with that.
Yeah. Again, I mean, going like from the heritage of, like specifically James Ferraro, the way he, I mean, I'm trying to think of, there's other bands that probably get lumped into hypnagogic pop, but I'm, when like at the end of the day in the studio, I'll often just like, I mean, he has such a fucking insane back catalog, kind of go through his stuff. And what I find interesting about it is like, you kind of mentioned like, like there's no critical analysis in that level of music, and that it's sort of just disappearing into a world. I think that's true, especially with his music, but he's like a genius. Like he, yeah, for instance, like he made an album, I might get the title wrong, but it's like Fanfare for the Boston Marathon. Oh. And it's sort of like about the Boston Marathon bombing, but it's not, how the fuck is a guy who wasn't there, who was just a citizen, going to make that album? He's just interested in it, like, which I understand. I'm interested in shit like that. I mean, it's just interesting. Like, but in the album is all like Tom Clancy, brass, like The Fugitive style, and it's just he's very clever without being over intellectualizing anything of like how to point to something. It's very much like the job of an artist. It's like he's right. not yeah. over, you know what I mean? He's just pointing to something and letting you, and it's like he nailed it. And I think that's kind of what happened with like Far Side Virtual, like pointing to the like tech utopia, hot, like energy of the 90s and right. shit.
Yeah, that sort of yeah. Global Village coffee house. Like Coca-Pelli's in an internet cafe, and this idea of the global village, and it's also interesting because that album at the time it was a bit divisive, but it became like incredibly valuable in sort of interpreting the world to come, you know, and people mm-hmm. started to see the world through that lens, and I think that's kind of what's most interesting about art, at least to me, you know, like having discussions is one thing, you know, especially like discussions about art. And that's kind of where I'm headed. You know what I mean? But I also think it's important, like the best thing about being an artist is like, at least if you're doing it right, you know, I'm not saying I'm doing it right or whatever, but the thing that I like about your record is it isn't on the nose. It's not didactic. It kind of feels like a retreat, but it's also, you know, it's also timely because of AI and because of all of these, you know, new technologies that are kind of like, you know, I mean, I'm a little bit worried, honestly. I'm pretty paranoid about AI mm-hmm. personally, but it just kind of like, there's something like really warm about it. Like just, I know I have to get a 4-track again because I actually came to a different place. I was all 4-track.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't record with computers until 2017, 2018. Everything mm-hmm. was 4-track. So I got into Ableton way later. And now I'm like, man, I don't want to look, you know, like who wants to look at a computer when they're making music? Like it's just, yeah. It's so soul crushing.
Yeah, it sucks. I mean, for me, I mean, I'm sure that people have a great relationship with their computers when they're making music, but just seeing like the blocks, it like kind of, yeah, just in little blocks that are arriving, all your parts. It's not that interesting to me, but you can still make great shit on a computer, obviously, right. But I've been doing the analog stuff for a long time. And just, I like the results. Also my shit is so sparse that, yeah, dude, I need to be surprised by my shit. I'm not really that fluent on guitar. I need something to surprise me. And the tape creates a lot of, like, I don't know, incidental things that happen that are, it helps me, I don't know, feel like there was another hand helping me or something.
That's a good way to put it. I just like the thing about tape that I like is just how it rounds the edges off of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then it brings out this like ultra high frequency of the hiss, you know, unless you use the Dolby noise reduction setting. I know a lot of people don't use that because they think mm-hmm. it kind of mutes the sound. There's something about it though that's just, I don't know. Like what, I just wanted to ask, like, you know, you're a real head. So what are some crazy records that you found? Give me some backstory on them, like what makes them interesting. Mine was like finding international artists in high school, 13th floor elevators, all of that stuff, like hearing The Jug, that kind of had that same warm, distant but inviting quality mm-hmm. that, you know, I think went on through you know, all of the kind of noise tape stuff and James Ferraro and all that too, you know, like that there's something about that. What are some records that just you can't live without? Crazy backstories, bios, just throw some stuff out.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I mean, you got to understand also though, I'm working on a monthly basis. My job is to make a fucking playlist, and every track is uploaded individually. So to take time to be drawn into someone's biography is a whole other thing. However, there's albums, right. For instance, actually, I mean,
not bios, but just process sounds, just
right.
Typical, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Right.
Bios
right.
The wrong word.
No. That's that. Like, I'm trying to think. I mean, there's one record out there. I mean, you find records out there where you're like, if I had a reissue label, this would be one of the first things I'd put out there. There's a really good record by a band called Ferris Wheel that, I mean, looking at so much of this music from the that era, not much is very referential or even accidentally like echoes like the Velvet Underground. And if it does, it's oftentimes like through the lens of like, I'm a dirty New York street guy, which is great. I love hearing that. Like Randy and the Goats or some shit. But yeah, no, there's just this one record by a band named Ferris Wheel that is just really vibes. Like, I don't know, I guess it must be, the guitar or something, but, trying to think what else,
what's the name of that record?
Supernatural Girl.
Oh, cool. Where's it from?
Now, I don't know the answer. I mean, if you look at the YouTube page, I have no fucking idea. It's like a stock image of like a fairy. I've never seen, there might be an image of the actual vinyl somewhere, but I'm most familiar with
It's super cool. Ed Rich Stan. That font is incredible. Oh my God.
Yeah.
There's an original one. That's $2,000 on eBay in pounds. So it's 2,000 pounds right now.
2,000. Oh, wow. Well, I guess people like it then. I didn't know that. It's a great one. I'm trying to think of other just, I mean, a lot of this shit is sort of track by track. I don't want to have to draw up my iTunes, but I will just real quick. Fucking, like off the top of my head, what the hell is like a standout band of all this stuff? I mean, to be honest, I upload these tracks, dude. I forget. I don't even know who the fuck is on these mixes. I mean, because I have to work so fucking fast. you know,
I think that's a real misnomer of people who are into music or they like, you know, have to talk about stuff. Cause that's like my job is this idea that like you're super invested in everything and you're not just kind of like mapping territory or just kind of feeling things out intuitively. It's like, man, I don't remember most, you know, anything that I say. It's just, it all just kind of moves through you. You know what I mean?
Right.
Especially with music, you know, like there's stuff I'll get super into. And then like 2 weeks later, I'll be like, what was the name of that album? It was like, you kind of get it right, but it's kind of wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. One band who like, I just went to the end of the earth with like finding everything is a band called The Regime, and they're out of, England. As far as their backstory, I mean, I don't believe they were like prep school kids like Index or anything like that. But yeah, they're just all really home recorded stuff. And I don't even know how to define the genre. Very really, I think the stuff that ends up on the show, I mean, some of it definitely is easy to place in a genre, especially like garage or somewhere that blurs the line of like garage folk. That's right. Always a nice area. I really love garage. In fact, I'm a little leery of some of the country stuff. I mean, country is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful genre. But in a way, sometimes I leave I mean, I'm not like being, it's not a courtesy of mine, but I'm like, dude, this is somebody else's show. You know what I mean? Like the right. Yeah, country music is, I'm definitely not throwing that under the table, but I sometimes I'm like, I'd rather focus on garage stuff. I think we were speaking when we were chatting about like frat rock, and right. we have a mutual friend who's pretty interested in the frat rock stuff for a while.
Yeah, frat rock is a lot of fun. I really like what's the name of that one? Oh, Johnny and the Hurricanes.
Okay. You know, I don't know if I know anything that one off the top with of my like head.
The saxophone. That's really great driving music. You live in New York, so you don't drive, but yeah, I'm just, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's. You know, even it's funny you're talking about like you don't like country music, but you're not throwing it under the bus. That's cool. You know, it's cool that you're so honed in and you're so focused on this specific thing. And also NTS it's become such an open platform, you know, like there's so many different niche and specialties. And I think that's kind of what's made it cool. It's not just, you know, Boiler Room, DJ culture, Red Bull Music Academy. Like it could have gone that route, but you know, there's like archival music shows, there's tributes to the Wicker Man, you know, there's so many different things you can find.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, when I got on there, I was like, not intimidated by the platform, but it's like, yeah, I think it makes most sense if I just did my job and focused. I don't know how that happened. I think the first few episodes I did were a little more like loose. I remember including like new wave stuff, but quickly kind of adjusted into just, you know, it was probably kind of just the accounts that I was following on YouTube. I don't know. I just sort of eventually narrowed into a genre that now I like am so aware of that I think I know the dates of where the music belongs, you know, but that's not always true, man. I mean, like, dude, if it rips and it fits, like there's one account I follow that uploads a lot of like weirdo shit from the 90s, which I was telling you before that I do have severe blank spots with a lot of music, but like, you know, weirdo home recording guys from probably anywhere. I mean, Long Island, the Midwest, whatever. But yeah, just classically weirdo stuff. But I like when weirdo music is from the heart a lot of the time. I don't always love weirdo for weirdo's sake, but I'm open to that too. You know what I mean? But you know, I like love songs and shit. But I like fun songs too. I mean, with frat rock, I mean it's pretty basic. But I mean, like I like Hang On Sloopy, dude. I mean, I just like that shit.
Right. No. Definitely. It's really sort of interesting. Like, I love all that stuff too. You know, I think it's kind of a, you know, it's. It's such a weird time to navigate though right now. You know what I mean? Like, doesn't it feel like, you know, a lot of this music is just so unloaded with you know, like so the lyrics are just about like music itself, like Beach Boys literally music that's just about loving music. You know, it's just about romance and love or just kind of like this laconic psychedelic world that, you know, people are just kind of inhabiting. There's something kind of cool about that.
Yeah. I would agree. I'm trying to think of some other examples off the top of my head, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, name some more examples. I see, that's kind of what I'm interested in.
Okay, of music about music or music that's self-aware or something?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Gosh, man. The fuck would be a perfectly self-aware song? Again, man, I mean, I think that there's other people out there who they pride themselves with their body of knowledge about these sorts of things right. and their like, you know, ability to recall these sort of things. But it's not necessarily a point of pride for me, but I'm very happy with the show. I mean, I love the show, and I think that it's I'm a fan just like everybody else, really, just because, you know, I mean, I found it 3 days before it goes out there, basically. It's not like I'm over here with hoarding this crazy record collection. I'm just doing what anybody who took their jobs, I mean, not like a, but yeah, took it seriously would be doing. I mean, like, and, but I guess there's probably an element of like what songs you choose and shit like that.
Right. Would you say that you, what would you say about, just in terms of, so do you collect records at all?
No, I don't, but I'm not like ascetic or whatever, but no, I don't. I mean, I, you know, I'm a, like an American consumer guy, like, and I'm like, I'm, and also I like lo-fi music. I don't need the, I don't have a crazy Marantz, you know, stereo system, and more power to that. Like, I have a friend who has some crazy tricked out iPod that it's like, he's really audiophile when it comes to the sonic element. For me, like, I just like hearing the song kind of, but,
right.
So, you know, yeah, so kind of, I don't mind a digital file, but no, I mean, I, back in the day, I had a few records that I liked, but, you know, nothing, I wasn't, in, you know, finding things on eBay that were like, you know, from the Uline that was like, I really would love to own this.
Right.
You know, but that's great, man, and there's people out there who are, and that's, it's good that there's a market for that, I guess. I mean, obviously.